culture, discipline, accountability.
Mistreatment, misrepresentation.
Knowledge is power, y'all.
There has to be accountability.
This pandemic of toxic work culture and mistreatment has got to stop.
The podcast for federal employees by federal employees.
Welcome back to another episode of Fed Up. I'm your host, Ron Speakman, and today we will be picking back up with my guest from last week, Rich Ray, with part two of this interview. Now, Rich, you were also recently involved, maybe it was last year, with an arbitration case for your carriers. Can you share how that went for you and how that was for you?
Yeah. Listen, I got to be honest with you, brothers and sisters. When I became president in 2016, I was sworn in as president. I think it was 2016. But, you know, sometimes it feels like it's longer, and then sometimes it feels like it's shorter. But when I, the first thing that when we got sworn in, me and my brother Paul Cobb, he's my go-to guy, and we said we're going to change things. We're going to change the game. Okay, we're not going to allow management to be comfortable in violating the contract. They're going to learn. They're going to learn that they cannot feel comfortable violating the contract. They need to understand
right.
The letter of law is just that, and it's going to be enforced either by the by grievance or them following the letter of law.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point between 2017 to 2019, management just abused the CCAs. I mean, when I say abused the CCAs, they just literally spit in their faces. That's how I look at it, okay?
Right.
You had a hold down. It didn't matter, okay? You never carried your hold down. They moved you to station to station. They made you do pieces in one station, do pieces in another station, using your own cars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, it was just a hot mess. And we filed grievance after grievance after grievance after grievance. Okay, we got to the point in 2020, COVID hit. And I understood, you know, the staffing dropped. We all understood. Okay, we all understood. But there still had been some type of rule. And I sat down with the postmaster and we discussed it. And the postmaster came up with an agreement with me, a local agreement, you know, that just was for COVID-19 to protect Staten Island letter carriers to do whatever they, you know. So we came up with some kind of local agreement where this won't happen, this won't happen, that won't happen. Now, silly me, you know, we have a national agreement that's been signed since 1970, you know, all the way through, and they never follow that. Why would they follow a local agreement, right? Yeah, I don't know. Silly me for thinking that, you know. But I tried, you know. And the postmaster, actually, she was on board with me, Adela Livingston, one of the best postmasters I ever worked for. I consider her, believe it or not, I consider her the best postmaster I ever worked with. She's a sweetheart, okay? They're out there. And unfortunately, she's not here no more, and I really hate that. And I call her a flat lever now. But anyway, I'll never forget that. They weren't following the MOU, the LMOU that we signed, the memo that we signed for the COVID thing locally. And I called her up and go, you know, your managers are not doing this and that. And she goes, well, you know what that means? What? They just told both of us to go fuck ourselves.
Wow.
She's right. Because her signature was on there and they still weren't following it. So she says, you got my blessing. Not that I need a blessing anyway. But it was her way of saying that, you know, I understand. They just told both of us to go fuck ourselves.
Wow.
And so I filed these grievances again, over and over and over again. Finally, the DRT turned around and says, look, we have 400 pages of past elements of the same violation. If that's not repetitive, then there's something wrong with me. I don't know what repetitive means. I don't know what continuous violations mean. I have cease and desist. Then they stopped giving cease and desist. All they do is pay money. And I kept on saying, I don't want the money. I want you to stop.
Right.
That's all I want you to do is stop. We don't want, do you hear me? We don't want the money. My CCAs want to have a home. They want to carry their hold downs. They want to be left the F alone. So finally, the DRT saw it all way. I put together this whole narrative. I pretty much yelled at the DRT for always settling for money. And it passed it. We went to arbitration, and the arbitrator, you know, he listened to our arguments. And honestly, guys, I thought our advocate and myself thought we lost that case because we pissed him off. Because we gave him three cases because they did three cases in one because they were all identical. There was like 800 pages per case, and none of them were numbered.
Oh.
And he was pissed. And obviously, that's why it wasn't numbered.
Learning lesson.
So this guy was pissed during the year. He was yelling at us. He goes, "This is ridiculous. I never sat in a thing that this organized, nothing numbered, you know, because we couldn't find the pages." So I did my testimony. This guy was pissed. He even got nasty with me at one point. I walked out of there. I says, "Oh boy, we fucked this up. I mean, even the witnesses, because they let the two carriers in there that there was their holdout violations.
Right.
They were in there throughout the whole hearing. And they came out and they says, "Oh man, he doesn't like you guys." And really, he goes, "Yeah, man, he was mad. He was yelling at Pat." You know, Pat was our advocate. He was yelling at him the whole time. And I don't think this is going to go good. Like, shit, you know. So anyway, fast forward a month later, we get this decision, right? And I'm afraid to open it, you know. the only reason why I opened it because it was from Larry, and Larry says, "Good decision," you know, in caps. And you know, I'm like, why is he being sarcastic? So I opened it and I read it, and sure enough, we had merit. We got a cease and desist. The branch got a lump sum payment of $3,000.
Wow.
The carriers got $300 on top of their additional 50% for the day. So they got about $600. And you know, and guess what? After that arbitration decision, we went to a pre-op. I didn't go to a pre-op, but they went to a pre-op with the same decisions, and they gave the branch $3,000 and the carriers the same amount of money. And they stopped violating the holdouts, and the holdouts stopped.
Which is what it's about.
That's what it's all about. And so yeah, that arbitration was really, look, I gotta tell you, that was my first arbitration that was a contract in a very, very long time.
Well, I gotta say, and great fucking job.
Thank you, brother.
even though you didn't number the fucking pages, hey, it was a learning lesson, and you won.
Yeah, you know what? That's why you cannot, look, the one thing I can tell you about arbitrators, they might be emotionally upset during the hearing,
right?
But they don't emotionally attach themselves to the case file. They read it for what it is, okay?
Sure.
And that's the one thing. So you can never, look, we were in an arbitration case a long time ago that the arbitrator loved us, okay? We thought it was going our way, and it didn't go our way. So don't go by how the arbitrator is acting, right? Just go by the case file. That's all I can tell you.
Go by the facts.
That's it.
Now, Rich, as a president, and after actually we just talked about this arbitration, the OSHA stuff. You know, obviously we have the Elm, we have JCAM, right? What violation, or I should say, what article, whether it be 16, Article 8s, 14s, do you see being violated the most? And how many do you settle totally per month, would you say? And how many are settled during step A, meaning how many are sent up and won in arbitration?
Wow.
Monthly.
Okay.
Monthly, because I don't want to do yearly. Monthly.
Well, I can tell you what. Our biggest thing is forced overtime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been forced overtime since I became a union rep. So that's why I'm so good with Article 8s. The 12 and 60 violations have died out.
Okay.
Right now, because the mail volume dropped a little bit, but they're usually continuous. So on a monthly basis right now on Staten Island, my biggest violations right now is Article 8s, forced overtime, failure to comply, not making carriers whole from decisions that they were supposed to pay adjustments on.
Mm-hmm.
My other case, I would have to say, is a continuous of pay. It seems like whoever gets injured and gets COP,
mm-hmm.
it seems like management puts them in the wrong code and they never get their COP.
Yep.
And I keep on following that grievance.
What happens is I think I see them, I don't know, willful misconduct or just not knowing, but
I think it's both. I think they both go hand in hand now, because if you don't, if you're responsible to know, then it's like me, you know, I'm hearing, oh, we got supervisors that don't know. Okay, well, guess what? Now I got carriers that don't know. Okay, a carrier showed up to go carry route 812. He never put mail in the box before. He don't know what he's doing. You're going to accept that excuse?
No.
You know, this guy's got access to our tax.
And you know
our
what?
Payroll.
Yep, and you just said a tax. Carriers, please be careful. I got to say this, Rich. Don't get fucked like I did and many others did. They put you in as LWOP, right? Leave without pay status. Which is code 060. When your claim gets accepted, management should be putting you in tax as LWOP OWCP, which is code 049. Please make sure this is done, okay? Because this will screw with your retirement, your pay status, a Form 50. If there's a step increase, you're not going to get that. And the longer you're in LWOP, obviously, naturally, the more that's going to screw you. So please, not LWOP 60. Right? Code 060. You want to be code 049, which is LWOP OWCP. I'm sorry, Rich. I had to throw that in there.
No. And just so we're clear to the CCAs, if you see TE Crossfoot, that's wrong as well.
Mm.
You let your student know right away, because CCAs got different codes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they like to use this TE Crossfoot, which to me, I never knew what that was until CCAs got injured on the job. I didn't even know if they even had a TE Crossfoot. So for some reason, that's happening on Staten Island. I'm pretty sure if that's happening on Staten Island, it's happening all over.
Sure. Naturally.
Naturally, you would think, right? I mean, I know, one thing I have learned, no one's unique. No branch is unique. Okay. We all face the same assholes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's always the same fucking problems, and some might be a little bit bigger than others, but we all have the same see, that's the weirdest part. When I met Ron, okay, me and Ron were on the phone, I think we talked for the first time on the phone,
yeah,
right?
To like 1 o'clock in the morning.
we were like from 8 o'clock to 8 o'clock to 1 o'clock in the morning. We were just, me and him were just going back and forth, and you know what the funny part about that was? Me and you were complaining about the same thing. We were just saying it differently.
Sure.
You know, but we're all going through the same problems. And so no one's unique. So keep that in mind, CCAs. TE Crossfoot. Keep an eye on that.
There you go. Some nuggets for you out there.
Yeah.
Now, Rich, how many out of those that you did out of 8 per month would you say that you've done during that time span?
Oof.
If you had to break it down, not exact, obviously.
No, I mean, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Ron, it's a lot. I got 13 stations.
Wow.
I would say there's a violation at least twice a week in each station. Give or take. Some stations more than others. I would say I'm doing about 50 to 60 formal A's a month.
Wow. And out of those 50 to 60, how many would you say, give or take, that you would send up the ladder to DRT?
All of them.
Oh, wow. Wow.
All of them. Yeah. I don't settle no more. I don't settle no more for, if I don't get a cease and desist,
mm-hmm.
I just don't settle no more. It's not about the money no more.
Right.
I keep on telling them that. Right now, as we're talking, I just opened up my log. Right now, I have 76 cases pending a Step B decision. And right now, I have arbitration cases. I have 76 cases that are pending a date for arbitration.
You know what? I got to admit this, because if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But this may be one of those times. So whoever y'all are listening to this and you hate me, enjoy it while you can. But I think that, because I'm barely ever wrong, I think that me calling out national or local presidents in certain cases, blaming them which ironically, they still should be blamed for a lot of things. But what I want to say is, for your region and the other regions out there who are better off than the average region out there, and there's a few out there, but for the most part, we're not like Region 15 or these other regions, okay? I want to point out that instead of pointing a finger, which I do sometimes, but I call a spade, like I said, it could possibly be that why you guys are better off than a lot of regions could very well be because you file grievance after grievance after grievance after grievance. There's no reason to ask for the help. I should say to less likely ask for the help of your NBA or national because you file so many grievances and you hold management accountable. Therefore, a lot of the little stuff, which is the big stuff, doesn't really pop off much because they know if it does, grievance, and you win. You're going to win, period. So I just wanted to throw that out right there. If that could be a contributing factor why you guys set yourselves apart because like we talked about earlier, not a people see something, but they don't say something. They don't file the grievance. Well, guess what? You're tolerating that behavior, so it's going to happen continuously, right? So just wanted to point that out. Yeah. That, hey, that could be.
I agree with you, Ron. I agree with you. The 8190, which is our grievance form, is the power. Mm-hmm. That's the moving document. That's the body of everything. And verbally, management might agree with your arguments. Verbally, management might say, yes, you're right. And it don't mean nothing. And I'm telling you right now, if you want to see results, you need to follow the 8190. Now, everybody's doing the one-hour office time nationwide. Everybody's doing this 22-minute off loading time. I'm hearing people, no SPRs in the case. I'm hearing, there's so many things that I'm hearing. The red line policy. Well, I don't want you all that, okay? And we filed grievances as soon as it started, and it was put to a stop within weeks because they saw the grievances coming. And here's the thing what you guys need to understand, okay? Management has no problem giving you a PDI. Management seriously has no problem copying and pasting the letter of warning, okay? But once the steward starts putting in requests for information so they can file the grievance, once the steward puts in for steward time to do the grievance, once the steward puts in for steward time to do the informal A, once the formal A rep puts in for time to do the formal A, and all this paperwork that's got to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, management don't want to do all that. Management's going to be like, it's not even worth writing somebody up, okay? It's not even worth violating this because now I'm going to have to find two people to do one route because this stupid asshole needs five, because they call us assholes. I mean, you know, don't think they
listen,
don't.
That's
they
why
don't.
We call them stupid visors or boss holes. So it is what it is.
Yeah. I feel like you stole my line.
Oh, I'm sorry, brother.
It's all right. But it's true. It's true. Managers don't want to do all this. So if you're going through something in your station, in your post office somewhere, and I hear it a lot from people. My branch president don't do nothing. My shop steward don't do nothing. My MBA don't do nothing. And then, you know, when we do an investigation, we find out that you never talk to your shop steward. You never went to your branch president. Don't just think that we see it, all right? I see what I see, but if you don't tell me what I don't see, what do you think is going to happen? Nothing. Nothing. Right. Yeah, I saw the digital clock on the wall, so I grieved it, okay? But would it have been nice that why did I have to walk into the building to see that? Why couldn't someone tell me? Why did I have to see that for myself? Right.
Communication.
You know? Right. There might be a day that I'm not going to walk into your building for about a month, and you're going to have to deal with it for a month. That's silly.
Man.
You know?
Now, Rich, I want to switch gears yet again here. I want to get back to on-the-job work injuries. Now, for the audience out there, how often would you say, real quick, being not just carriers, but postal employees in general, get hurt on the job?
Oh, at least once a week.
I mean, I even say every day. We just don't report it.
In my branch, I would say once a week, at least once a week. I mean, on the average, at least once a week. In my branch, I would say just letter carriers. I have about 24 people that I know of And thank God for Federal Injury Centers in Manhattan.
We'll definitely get to them in a moment.
Yeah. I got people getting injured here at least once a week just on in my craft on Staten Island. I would say I'm with you at least once a day in the whole company, maybe more than once a day. Definitely.
And in doing and with these injuries, is it more management that's an issue or union representation that's an issue? What would you say is the biggest issue regarding when a carrier? Both, but which one would you say gravitate? Why do you say both, I should say?
I say both because when you don't have the proper union representative that knows what they're doing, they don't have no knowledge, and then you have a supervisor who is purposely trying to hurt you, that's the perfect recipe for disaster.
That's why they say the biggest thing is, the painful thing is, it's not the injury, it's the process.
It is the process. The process is the most painful thing that you have to go. I haven't been injured, you know, knock on my head. I haven't been injured in my career, but I can tell you what, I have helped so many people who have been injured, and I've seen people go homeless. I have seen people. Look, I get emotional.
Talk to them.
Because carriers go through a nightmare. And it's not just the process. It's what they go through in their family, with their families. And you have a man that gets hurt on a job, seriously injured, and doesn't get paid and can't support for his family. Now we're going into depression.
Yes.
Now we got a guy who cannot support for his family. Now we got a wife that's getting hard. Now we got the wife side of the family belittling him. There's nowhere to turn. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be
and
like
And what do they
this.
Tell us? They tell us, call EAP. What the fuck are they going to do besides listen to our problems that you willfully fucking created? God, I'm sorry.
EAP, I don't even know why it's in the questionnaires in the PDIs. Okay? I'm the one that when they started with this EAP questionnaires in the PDIs, I was the one that brought it to Larry Cirelli's attention that I thought was improper. I never liked that. Right. I don't understand why you're asking someone that's 46 years old if I need EAP because I have unauthorized overtime. What the fuck?
No, I need you to do the right thing here. It's called integrity. What
right. Yeah, you know, but I heard from, you know, Larry told me, no, it's not, you know, as long as they're offering it, we can't stop it. All right, but I don't like it because I think it's insulting. Yeah. But whatever. That was the one battle I lost, okay? But, yeah, I don't know what EAP is going to do for you when you're not getting
nothing.
Paid. And you have a denied claim. EAP ain't doing nothing for you. EAP is good if you're into depression.
Exactly.
Okay? I'm not saying don't seek help when you're in depression, but let's be real. When you get injured and you go into depression, it's because your case is being fucked with over and over again. And let me tell you something. I would like to blame everything on management, but a lot of cases on Staten Island that wind up becoming a nightmare for my carriers is because of their doctors.
Amen. That's another big factor. Yeah. I mean, you nailed the nail on the head there, brother. But listen, management with the willful misconduct, neglect, and total disregard for our case, and not even having information. If they did, they're not fucking doing it. It hurts us. And I hear you when you say you got a wife who's belittling a husband who can't work, and he's not getting the help that he deserves to get back to work to provide for his family. I mean, there's people who get divorced, lose their kids, lose their homes, as you said, but there's even those who take their own lives. It should not get to that fucking point. I don't care if you're a union representation, local or national level, management, whatever agency you're in, fucking do the right thing because it's not your life that's at stake. It's that person who got injured on a job. But Rich, you mentioned the doctors. Obviously, we know one of the biggest issues, willfully or not, right, is management or even our unions, lack of representation. But it comes down to knowledge in a lot of cases and that information and know-how, right? So there's a reason. Now, I'm going to talk real quick about the union side of things because unions, I mean, NALC is our union or other unions for that matter. It is time to get jaw heads out your asses because there's a reason and rightfully so that many of our members are going to outside sources for help in regards to an injured carrier. I'm sorry, or injured postal worker, injured whoever you are. There's a reason why. It's not just our union. It's many different unions across this country. Now, you mentioned doctors. The language needs to be there with federal work comp, right? Now, we talk about the five basic elements, right? You got to be timely filed. The claim must be made by a federal civil employee, right? The third one, I believe, is you have to establish the fact of injury, which is both factual and a medical component, right? It has to include both. Medically, a medical condition must be diagnosed in connection with that injury or event, but also factually, the injury or accident or employment factor alleged must have actually occurred. Number four would be the established performance of duty. That just means the injury or medical condition arisen during the course of employment, which obviously it would, or she didn't report the injury. But perhaps the fifth one, which is the number one cause, I believe personally, which is for denied claims, is to establish a causal relationship, which means the medical evidence established or that has, the diagnosis condition is causally related to the injury or event. That is the established through the medical reports of all doctors involved in the treatment stemming from this injury. It comes down to a NADR report, all right? So many doctors say they do Fed work comp, but then they're like, shit, this is a nightmare. I can't do this. They don't want to do this. They don't know the language. They're not trained well enough. If it's a schedule award, they're back on the fifth edition. Rather, they should be using the sixth edition because you're leaving money on the table, right? And quite frankly, they accepting the sixth edition now more so than the fifth. But the NADR reports. So the doctors. So which brings me to federal injury centers. Federal injury centers. Wednesday night OWCP chats with Chris and Jeannie. Breaking OWCP. I mean, Chris and Jeannie even has a podcast coming out soon. Breaking OWCP podcast, which they'll be launching very, very soon. But federal injury centers creates a network of doctors for us across this country for us federal employees to use so we don't have to deal with this aspect of things. The NADR reports, I spent thousands of NADR reports before I even met Chris and Jeannie, and I didn't have to, but I did because I put it on my credit card and fell in debt, went months without pay, yada, yada. But they made me pay when I wasn't even getting paid from my employer, right? Because I was injured. But talk to me, Rich, because in Manhattan, Federal Injury Centers does have an office that is helping your carriers. Is it helping your carriers? Why and how? And what is your feedback from your carriers who have utilized them? And did they all get accepted claims?
Oh, God. Ryan, let me tell you something. This subject is very, very hard to talk about without being a little crybaby. All right. The one thing that we failed in when we took over this branch was OWCP.
Right.
We had denied claim after denied claim after denied claim. And no matter what we did, we couldn't help them because we weren't MDs. We knew what needed to be done, but we couldn't find a doctor that would talk to us, that understand what we're looking for, and could care less because they were doctors. We had carriers that went homeless. It was a nightmare for us, okay? It wasn't like I could file a grievance and get you paid. Then we got to deal with the postal animal because now you have a denied claim, so now you have an injury that's not job-related, right? So now you're out of work, and, your need to supply medical documentation, maybe disability, what do they call it, separation disability? They're trying everything on my people with this. So I met Chris and Jeannie and I begged Chris to get somebody here in New York. I didn't care where he got them. He could have got them all the way upstate New York. Just get them here in New York, you know? So now Manhattan comes along and let me tell you something. These doctors, Ron, they're great fucking people. Great people. Warm-hearted people. They understand. They're union oriented. They're great people. I got maybe only two employees right now after denied claims, okay? But they're going to get approved. 99% of my claims now, of my injuries on Staten Island, are all approved because of this place.
And let me guess, the other 1% are still in the pipeline waiting to get accepted.
Right. Well, yes.
Yes. Yes, sir.
But it used to be the other way around. It used to be 99% that was denied. Seriously, Ron, I'm not kidding you. We
talk about a comeback.
Oh, my God. And let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. The feedback that I get from my brothers and sisters that go down there, oh, my God, they know what they're doing. And not only they know what they're doing, they knew how to treat them, too.
Let me ask you something. Does it cost them any money out of pocket whatsoever to go to a federal injury center?
Zero.
Repeat that. Zero.
Zero. Z-E-R-O.
Oh, zero. Zero. That's right.
It's 0.00.
Listen, okay. Rich, so I interviewed Chris Helms actually last week before I got on the horn here with you. But and I talked about an email that was sent out from my MBA to all the local presidents. And I urge you to listen to that because I go in on my MBA and on the National Union because they really tried to discredit and disrespect federal injury centers and Chris Helms without doing their own due diligence and homework themselves. How are you going to say that federal injury centers does not have the best interest of our carriers that you, the NALC, represents? You're not fucking representing anybody because they're going to outside sources for the help, number one, because you're not helping them. Number two, you did not ever reach out to Chris Helms or federal injury centers to discuss or vet them whatsoever. If you did that and felt the same way, so be it. Keep it moving. But you didn't. So for you to say all this shit in this email, which I covered last week, so go check that out if you're interested. It's pretty hot stuff.
I definitely will.
And again,
but I want to add to that.
Sure, go ahead.
I want to add to that. I want to really add to that because this is really important, okay? And I said this to Chris Helms once, okay? Because I love Chris. Chris, I consider a friend, family. He's a brother, okay?
But what do you always say? What do you always say he is? He's the what of doctors?
He's the shop steward of doctors.
There you go.
Okay? Because now, this is all I got to say, okay? It costs us nothing to send our people to federal injury centers to be examined and to be taken care of when it comes to OWCP.
Mm-hmm.
The day our people don't get treated right is the day we stop sending people there. It doesn't cost us nothing. What's happening around the country is our people are being denied. Everybody who goes to federal injury centers are being approved. I don't understand what the problem is.
So that's what I was going to ask you, Rich. Why do you think regions like mine and their MBAs are giving this, I call it a scare tactic, a fear tactic, for many different reasons. Why do you think they're saying this stuff that they're saying, but yet they're not holding a conversation? I know my answer is what I think, but I want to hear what you think, why that is.
It could be two things. It could be fear that someone else knows more than you do.
Amen.
Okay. It could also be not being knowledgeable what you're talking about. Okay. And it could be a little of both.
Sure.
I urge our national union, our national council members to review Federal Injury Center with an open mind and see them for who they are and hold a meeting with them.
Just have the conversation.
And see what they could do for our membership.
Absolutely. For free, mind you. That's not costing us, our members, national union, nobody.
Doesn't APWU invite Chris Helms to their
conventions? Absolutely. I think they were just there.
Yeah.
They go everywhere. They talk to the correctional officers, FBI agents, right? They're all over AFGE, right? Which is everyone else except for Postal Service, pretty much, right? For Federal Union. The president even has a good standing relationship with them and invites them to come out. Now, I can't speak for them, you know, but I can say this. Why is Chris Helms and Jeannie Helms and Federal Injury Centers good enough for them, but not good enough for us?
I have no idea.
I'll leave it at that.
I have no idea. I'm with you. That angers me. It angers me and embarrasses me because I know these people are good people. Mm-hmm. And I gotta tell you, with no one's getting a dollar from them, they're not getting a dollar from us. Okay. What they're doing is the way they get paid is when they get cases approved.
That's it. That's it. They don't pay for referrals. There's no kickbacks and bribes. Everything billed that is medically necessary is given to the patient, and they get the patient back to work as soon as possible with or without restrictions, right? With that 2499 form, which we talk about in a lot of different episodes. But what I'm getting at is their compliance, which, again, listen to last week's episode. I really go in my interview with Chris Helms from Federal Injury Centers. You could call it the conversation that the National Union should have had with them. I did it for them in this interview. You know,
good.
So, and I kind of went through that email. So please give it a listen and draw your own conclusion, you know, your own opinion from the facts. Okay. Not just from what I say, but from the facts. Okay. But regardless, I want to ask you this, Rich. Why is it that Region 15, obviously they have Manhattan Federal Injury Centers and other regions who do have an FIC location in them, why do their MBAs allow and support this, but yet it's the other unions like mine and the others who are like my idiot MBA feel the same way, and they actually, they're assholes. I don't know how else to say it. It's acceptable here, but it's not here.
I don't think Region 15 is supporting them.
Okay.
I don't think Region 15 is speaking against them neither.
Oh, I got you.
They support, yeah. I think Region 15 has been out of this conversation, even when Larry Cirelli was there.
Got you.
When I went there for the welcoming party, Larry Cirelli thought they were lawyers.
Oh. And
Larry Cirelli, they were, that was doctors. That was, and Larry was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's fine. And he never said nothing about it. He never told me to stop. He never told me not to go, but he never said I'm supporting it too. But Larry Cirelli is probably following his leadership at the national level, mm-hmm. like he's supposed to anyway. But the NBA at Region 15 hasn't outspoken about it, haven't said bad or good, and I don't think they support it. I do recall when we did that OWCP training, you remember?
The advanced OWCP training, right.
Yeah, I do recall the guy who gave the class, I don't want to say names.
Sure.
The guy that gave the class said something really horrible about them and looked right at us. And we all were looking at each other like I don't understand.
I had the same thing happen at my region's training, and I gave it right back. And I'm like, well, you say call you. Well, we do call you. Never answer the fucking phone. If you do, it's 2 months later, you return our call. What do you expect us to do as the injured worker?
The call. What can my union represent? Let me ask you something, Ron. I get hurt today. I break my leg, mm-hmm. right? And management's contesting the claim, and they sent this bullshit letter to Workman's Comp.
Controverting.
Workman's Comp comes back with the letter. I have to answer all these questionnaires. Now Workman's Comp wants a medical narrative.
Yep.
Okay. What are you going to do for me?
What am I going to do for you?
Nothing.
Oh.
Nothing. You know who can help me? The medical doctor, MD.
Well, that's not necessarily
why is
true.
Natural just embracing this.
I know. You're right. But also, it's not absolutely 100% accurate, because we can do a lot by giving ourselves the information, learning the knowledge. And if you're, God forbid, if you go to a doctor that doesn't know, the vice president of my local, she's fucking great. She's awesome. She's not even an OWCP specialist, but people go to her or myself because we get shit done. Okay. The reason being is because we know the language. We know what has to go into a letter. So she tells everybody, this is what you put in there. So by educating yourselves as the injured worker, you yourself can know, learn, understand, and now pass that on to your doctor. This is what has to be in here. Boom. And also, the five basic elements have to be met, just what I mentioned earlier. So you follow those five things. If you get a denial, they're going to tell you why. You follow that denial. You have to write another one, unfortunately, addressing the one that was denied under those five basic elements until it gets accepted. There's many different things. I'm not going to get into it all here, but advocate for yourself, educate yourself so you're better prepared. So when you go to a doctor, you can actually tell them the quote unquote language of what they use, not tell them how to do their jobs, but the language has to be in there. And this is what the language is. Can you please put this in your narrative report? That will be beyond a medical certainty that this, and this is what it is. So that's where it comes into play. So we can do something about it. But you're right. Also, it's the other people who should be telling us, or, you know, what to do as far as a doctor. I mean, it's a twofold question. There's pros and cons, right? But at the end of the day, you have to be your own best advocate and learn for yourself, because you can't put your life, your injury, your family, your well-being and health in someone else's hands, especially if you don't trust them.
I agree. And the one thing I want to also say is, you know, to my national union, and I hope they're listening to this, don't we want to have the experts to help our people with workman's comp medically? And that way all of us could focus on representation on the workroom floors and deal with what we need to deal with. Because a workman's comp case could take up to 12 hours of our time. Each case, a good case, is up to 12 hours of our time. It takes away from the things that we also need to do. We got people that could do this for us. Why not embrace that? We're not doing anything. The day that they fail us, that's the day we move on. But I don't see competition here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, there's a reason why they call Chris Helms the national leading expert on OWCP. This comes from not for himself classifying himself as that, but this comes from people he's helped. This comes from other people who know OWCP who are saying this about Chris Helms. So naturally, okay, so a lot of people, a lot of experts, a lot of people he's helped are calling him this. There has to be a reason why. Why do you think that is? Because he's helping us? Because he's getting claims accepted? We both can go on and on about this, but I'm in agreement with you, Rich. You know, we should be working with Chris Helms and federal injury centers rather than against them. And at the very least, have that conversation, because I guarantee you, you're going to find out that he's just like us. And when I say us, it's like people like Rich Ray, people like myself, or Larry Cirelli, people like even those few at the national level. And I'm not going to name their names, but I know you know who you are, because I love and adore you. But we all have one thing in common. We naturally care so fucking much and want to do what's right for our members. Let's embrace that. Let's embrace, like you said earlier, Rich, we have to recognize there's a problem before we can address it. While I've addressed it, again, please listen to my last episode, my interview with Chris Helms. I really think I do a great job at addressing that. And that is, all our members, I'm sorry, I can't say that. A lot of our members are going to outside sources, mainly FIC and Chris Helms, for help regarding an on-the-job work injury. It's because our local and or national union leaders are failing them. So please, at least recognize that as a problem. Federal injury centers and Chris Helms are not the enemy. Rather, they are a friend to help us in need. And they'll train, they'll do whatever they can. They're establishing a network of doctors for us. Have a conversation, man. That's all we want and ask of you. Please, don't just pass judgment because of, you know, what was done in the past from other people or third, you know, outside sources such as Team Work Ready. I'm not going to get into that. You guys can look that up in your own time. But they willfully did wrong and illegal things. They should be held accountable. But Chris's compliance is so much, I mean, in depth. It's part of the manuals. It's part of their training. And actually, Team Work Ready. And there's actually a national, state president from the state of Florida. And it's common knowledge. I mean, Lenny Perez. I mean, you guys know who he is. If you don't, you can look him up. Unfortunately, he got caught up, and it's unfortunate what happened. But we can't allow these negative experiences to dictate future endeavors and what's right for our members. That's all. I mean, you have anything else to say on that, Rich?
I got to say, it just pains me to know. Because me and you have tried to help people around the country on our own time. Okay. And It pains me to know that there's branches in this country that are not doing the right thing by our people when it comes to injuries, representation, etc. Why can't we take on someone who's willing to help federal employees with federal workman's comp the right way and get our people approved, get our people covered, get our people accepted for surgeries so that way they could get better, et cetera, et cetera. They're not, the day that they fail miserably, the day that they fail that all the other doctors are anyway, the day that they fail is the day that we move on. We got nothing to lose.
Exactly.
He has proven nothing to me but success. I had three major workman's comp cases on my desk that needed help, serious help. And it was beyond my, I didn't know what to do. I sent him the case files to tell him to look. And look, I asked him as a friend to look them over. Within 20 minutes, I get an email back with a whole narrative of what needs to be done and where they should go.
Wow.
Never said he had to go to their doctor, okay? Not their doctor, but what needs to be done. And now those carriers are approved.
And by
what did he get for that?
Nothing. He got the gratification of helping. And you know what? Ironically, that's what our union, our national union, should be doing. Again,
that's what they should
there's
be
a
doing,
select yes. few that... I'm sorry, I'm going to say you guys should not be in your fucking position, but unfortunately no one's running against you. So you're, we being the members are stuck with you in that position. You guys should not hold that position. I'm sorry. But then again, we have those who are in position that they deserve and probably even more, right? Because they do the right thing. They care and they want to help. At the end of the day, you're right. He didn't, what did Chris get? Nothing except for gratification. And man, it's just a shame. I feel your. I feel the same way you do, Rich, man. Rich, I want to ask you, what message would you have for our brothers and sisters out there who are going through some type of issue or problem, OWCP, work-related, workroom floor, union management issue, agency, whatever the case is, right? And they could be continuously going through it. What would your message be to them?
Well, my message to my brothers and sisters is there's somebody to help. Don't give up because on a local level, you got nobody. I know how lonely that is. Okay. Cause I've been there. I did not get involved as a union representative. The only reason why I got involved was because there was no one to help me or you. And that's why I got in there. All right. And plus, maybe I like to fight a little bit. But the reality is that we need our brothers and sisters to stand together and step up. OK. And don't say that you can't do this, because I'm going to tell you something. I'm doing it. And I'm telling you right now, I am not an intelligent person when it comes to school, books. I'm a letter carrier because I chose not to go to school. Okay. No one knew before my mom passed away, when she saw me write my grievances and all the manuals I had to go through. And she's like, ah, you didn't want to stay in school. How did that work out for you? You know, so she used to laugh at me all the time because I wind up doing it anyway. And I could have been a lawyer and I could have been getting paid $100,000 per case instead of getting paid $25 an hour. Okay. At work. My dream, I don't know what my advice would be, but what I could tell you is my dream in the end of this, what's my end game as the president of Branch 99 and possibly the senior vice president of Branch 41 Merge? My end game, my dream of this is that one day that every letter carrier on the workroom floor is a family and we're united as one and we're a fist as one. And management is not going to be able to do A, B, C, and D without our approval and our acceptance. That's my dream. I'm not talking about being bullies. I'm talking about management knowing their place of the contract and our people knowing their place of the contract and the manuals. We need a better workroom floor. And that's not just our management, because management's the easy part. We need our carriers to know what we're doing here, what we're trying to do. What is Richie Ray doing in that office with the door closed? Oh, he's not carrying his route. That's all I hear. He's not carrying his route. No one understands what's going on in here. Okay?
Right.
We are protecting you. We're defending you. Notice removals, emergency placements. Stop fighting each other. Okay? We need to stand one another. And let our national officers know the rank and file is paying attention. We're paying attention. We're not bitching no more. We're paying attention. Today, after this interview, I'm going on Branch, Minnesota. They're having a national union conference, the second one, for the rank and file about what can we do to let our national officers know we need a strong contract.
Mm.
Okay? Our movement is moving on. The Ron Speakmans of the world are speaking up. They're no longer staying quiet. It's no longer for their branch. The Corey Waltons are no longer being quiet. The Richie Rays are no longer being quiet. The Chris Helms are speaking up. There's brothers and sisters over this country that don't like what they're seeing that's happening to us. And for the brothers and sisters that don't see what's happening to us is bad, are the ones that I'm concerned about. You're allowing it to happen because you're not educating yourself. Pay attention to what's happening. What we need is us to be united, not divided. I'm not saying we need to go to all agree. Believe me, me and Ron Speakman don't agree on everything. We don't, okay? But we do believe in each other, and we do believe in what each other is saying. Is what we believe in, but the end game is you, a better workplace for you, a better source of for medical attention, a better place to go. No more nonsense. We're not getting. Ron Speakman does not want to happen to you. What happened to him? Richie Ray doesn't want to happen to you. What happened to me? Okay, but we need to stand together. And my advice to everybody out there is to be a brother and sister. You're a collective bargaining unit employee. Start acting like it. You got a contract. CCA to PTF to regular. You all have a contract. Act like it. Don't put a match to that contract and piss on it. Because once we lose the contract, we got nothing on this job. Okay? And that's the truth. And any of you think that collective bargaining, like, all right, our money could be better, our salaries could be better, but you cannot put a price tag to Article 15 or Article 16. Because without Article 15 and Article 16, Article 8 means shit. And that's the truth. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you need to know. And enforcing dignity and respect on the workable floor starts with our members. When I have people tell me I didn't see that, you did see it. You're afraid to give a statement.
See something, say something.
Yeah, and you're safe. If management comes after you because you gave me a statement, then we got a problem. And I want all of you to understand something, okay? If management's going to fire somebody because they're sticking up for themselves, then why am I still employed? You know how much money I cost this management team throughout the years as a shop steward and president and VP? You want to know how much money I cost them? You want to know how much money I cost them just in grievances alone? How many jobs I saved? How many EPs they had to make people whole? More, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm still here. So what are you afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. And never give up, guys.
I hope that's the message you were looking for, Ron.
Absolutely.
I mean,
it's your message, brother. You know, that's why I wanted to ask you. But in saying that, now I want to ask you the opposite end of that question, which is, what would be your message to those who are not inside the federal system, such as a politician, someone within the national media, whatever it be, someone outside the system looking in who doesn't know or understand what goes on from within, such as, the toxic work environments to begin with. But what would your message be to that person who is on the outside looking in?
Stop caring about money and start caring about the people you represent.
Strong.
Okay. That's the bottom line. Stop worrying about who gives you the biggest check to get you elected. Start worrying about the people. You'll get elected when you care about the people. You don't need money to get elected. Let's get away from that. And let's start paying attention to our men and women who serve our country eating out of garbage bags. Mm-hmm. Start paying attention to the men and women who give service to this country, the men and women who are behind the counters, ringing people up for their food, buying food, mailing out their medicine, the men and women who are running into fires, the men and women who are running into the bullets, the men and women who ran into the building that was collapsing in Manhattan. Start thinking about those fucking people that keep our country strong, okay? Federal employees are shit on, just like the American soldiers are shit on. You forget about us. Look what we need to do when we get injured on a job. How fair is that? How reasonable is that? Doctors got to pay $800,000 just to get a degree to become doctors. And you wonder why they don't want to deal with federal workers' compensation. You're wondering why doctors are charging someone who's got lung cancer $50,000 just to get checked up. Start worrying about the American people. Bottom line, wake the F up. We're going backwards. Mm-hmm. And if you don't wake up, you're going to get people against the wall. You're not going to want to see what the answer is, what the result is. You don't want to see us against the wall because I feel it. The anger is getting stronger. And we need our leaders to wake the F up. That includes all politicians, all federal, all union leaders, everybody. Stop worrying about a title. Stop worrying about the check. Start worrying about the people who you did care about, why you got involved in the first place.
Amen.
Stop. Stop worrying about the titles. This is not about title. It's about results. I don't want to be known as Richie Ray did this, Richie Ray did that. I want to be known that Lenny Carey stood up for themselves. That's the story I want to hear. Not Richie Ray, not Sobrato. I want to hear Lenny Carey stood up for themselves. And politicians, wake the fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
Because enough is enough. We got to worry about a PAC fund in order to get you people to listen to us. Come on, man. How fair is that? We could barely afford our bills every month. And we need to draw money into your purse so you could get elected, so you could care about us. Yeah, that bothers me. Okay? And the reality is you all need to get your head out of your asses and start paying attention to the people that you represent. And enough is enough. Because you know what? One day we will get a revolution. And we will get a group of people to run against you. And it's going to speak the truth. And the people will vote for them. It ain't going to be about money. So wake the fuck up before you lose that part of history. That's all I got to say.
Well said, Rich. Well said. Rich, listen, man, I thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure having you. And I look forward to talking and even seeing you again in the near future, my friend.
Ron, I appreciate you bringing me on. Thank you for giving me a voice. I am proud of you. What you're doing is amazing. Keep it up. I love you, brother, and we will definitely see each other soon.
I appreciate that, man. I love you too, man. Before I close out the show today, I have two quotes for you guys, as usual. First message or quote, I should say, from my brothers and sisters out there. Martin Luther King Jr. once said, "Don't allow anybody to make you feel that you are nobody. Always feel that you count. Always feel that you have worth, and always feel that your life has ultimate significance." Honestly, so basically be your own best advocate. Surround yourself by those who have your best interests at heart. Stay away from toxic people and know that there are people out here who do care and who will and want to help you when you need help. People such as Rich Ray, Federal Injury Centers, Chris and Jeannie Helms, Ron Speakman, right? Outside sources who are here for you. There are people here to help when you feel abandoned, left alone, basically to fend for yourself. You have resources here. So find them, utilize them, and share them with the next person who feels just like you. Because at the end of the day, you are not alone, my friends. Just know that. And to management out there, union leaders, even coworkers, listen, people don't leave bad jobs. They leave because of bad bosses, poor management, and toxic coworkers or environments. So do the right thing when no one's looking. It's called integrity. Otherwise, you may find yourself even more short-staffed and picking up the slack at work when the good employees leave.
Amen.
That about does it here for us at Fed Up. Please don't forget to like, follow, and share this podcast. And if you are fed up like everyone else is and want to share your story and experiences, your issues and frustrations, and want your voice to be heard, I invite you to be a guest on this show. There's strength in numbers, and together, by sharing our stories, we can and will make the change that is needed. Just send me an email at 1.fedup.podcast@gmail.com. Again, that's the number 1.fedup.podcast@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Again, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, stay safe out there, my friends.